You're listening to Wikisleep Podcast, a podcast designed to help you relax and unwind through calm, quiet storytelling. I'm your host, Adrian Sala. You can find Wikisleep Podcast on Facebook, Instagram, or your favorite podcast platform, or by visiting wikisleeppodcast.com, where you can support the ad-free experience through single or monthly donations of any amount. As we begin today, let's take a moment to pause and do some deep breathing. Settle in by taking a deep breath, filling your chest and lungs all the way up. Then, at the top of your breath, pause briefly before breathing out again and emptying everything completely. Do this a few times to help calm your mind and get you settled. Deep breathing is a wonderful tool to use whenever you may need it, be it during a sleep podcast, whenever you're feeling anxious, or any other time you need to find calmness and focus. Today's story, Rasputin. Grigory Rasputin was a Russian mystic and self-proclaimed holy man who befriended the family of Tsar Nicholas Romanov, the last emperor of Russia. Rasputin was born a peasant in the small village of Pokrovskoye, along the Tura River in Tobolsk Governorate in Siberia. According to records, he was born on January 21st, 1869. It is believed that his father, Yefim, was a peasant farmer and church elder who had been born in the same village in 1842. He married Rasputin's mother, Anna Parshakova, in 1863. The couple had seven other children, all of whom died in infancy and early childhood. Historians agree that, like most Siberian peasants, Rasputin was not formally educated and remained illiterate well into his adulthood. It is said that he had a somewhat unruly youth, possibly involving drinking, small thefts, and disrespect for local authorities. In 1886, Rasputin traveled to Abalak, Russia, some 250 kilometers northeast from his hometown, where he met a peasant girl named Praskovya Dubrovina. After a courtship of several months, they married in February 1887. The couple had seven children, though only three survived into adulthood. Dmitri, born in 1895, Mariah, born in 1898, and Varvara, born in 1900. In 1897, Rasputin developed a renewed interest in religion and left his village to go on a pilgrimage. His reasons for doing so are unclear, though, and according to some sources, Rasputin left the village to escape punishment for his role in a horse theft. Whatever his reasons, Rasputin's departure resulted in a radical life change. He was 28, had been married 10 years, and had an infant son with another child on the way. He had undertaken previous, shorter pilgrimages, but his visit to the St. Nicholas Monastery in 1897 was transformative. Rasputin spent months there, and it is believed that it was where he learned to read and write. He returned to his village a changed man, looking disheveled and behaving differently than he had before. He became a vegetarian and swore off alcohol, and prayed and sang much more fervently than he had in the past. He spent the years that followed living as a holy wanderer, leaving his village for months or even years at a time to wander the country and visit various holy sites. By the early 1900s, Rasputin had developed a small circle of followers, primarily family members and other local peasants who prayed with him on Sundays and other holy days when he was in his home village. He was still living within his father's household at the time, and the group held secret prayer meetings there. These meetings were the subject of some suspicion and hostility from the village priest and other villagers. It was rumored that female followers were ceremonially washing him before each meeting, and that the group sang strange songs that the villagers had not heard before, and even that Rasputin had joined the Khlisti, a religious sect whose ecstatic rituals were rumored to include self-flagellation and sexual orgies. Word of Rasputin's activity and charisma began to spread. At some point during 1904-1905, he traveled to the city of Kazan, where he acquired a reputation as a wise and perceptive holy man, one who could help people resolve their spiritual crises and anxieties. Despite rumors that he was having sex with some of his female followers, Rasputin made a favorable impression on the Father Superior of the Seven Lakes Monastery outside the village, as well as with local church officials who gave him a letter of recommendation to Bishop Sergei, the rector of the St. Petersburg Theological Seminary at the Alexander Nevsky Monastery. Sergei arranged for him to travel to St. Petersburg. Upon meeting Sergei at the Nevsky Monastery, Rasputin was introduced to church leaders, including a man named Theophan. Theophan was the inspector of the theological seminary, well connected in St. Petersburg society, and later served as a confessor to the Tsar and his wife. He was so impressed with Rasputin that he invited him to stay in his home. Theophan quickly became one of Rasputin's most important and influential friends in St. Petersburg. He helped him gain entry to many of the influential salons where the aristocracy gathered for religious discussions. It was through these meetings that Rasputin attracted some of his earliest and most influential followers. Alternative religious movements, such as spiritualism and theosophy, had become popular among the city's aristocracy, many of whom were intensely curious about the occult and the supernatural. Rasputin's ideas and strange manners made him the subject of intense curiosity among the city's elite, who, according to historian Joseph Furman, were bored, cynical, and seeking new experiences. His appeal may have been enhanced by the fact that he was also a Russian native, unlike other self-described holy men who had previously been popular in St. Petersburg. By 1905, Rasputin had formed friendships with several members of the city's elite, including the Black Princesses, Milica and Anastasia of Montenegro. The Black Princesses were instrumental in introducing Rasputin to the Tsar and his family. Rasputin first met the Tsar, Nicholas Romanov, on November 1, 1905, at the Peterhof Palace. The Tsar recorded the event in his diary, writing that he and his wife Alexandra had made the acquaintance of a man of God, Grigory from Tobolsk province. Rasputin returned home for a short time after their first meeting, but on his return in 1906, he sent Nicholas a telegram asking to present the Tsar with a religious icon. The meeting was approved, and on July 18th, he met with Nicholas and Alexandra. He did so again in October, where he first met their children, including Alexei, who suffered from hemophilia. Much of Rasputin's influence with the royal family stemmed from the belief by Alexandra and her circle that he had eased the pain and stopped the bleeding of Alexei. In the spring of 1907, he was summoned by Alexandra to pray for Alexei when he had an internal hemorrhage, and Alexei recovered the next morning. As a result of this, Alexandra's beliefs solidified and led the Tsarina to develop a passionate attachment to Rasputin. And he became an indispensable member of the royal entourage. The Tsarina's friend, Anna Vrbova, became convinced that Rasputin had miraculous powers through these incidences and would become one of his most influential advocates. During the summer of 1912, Alexei developed another hemorrhage in his thigh and groin after a jolting carriage ride, which caused a large hematoma. In severe pain and delirious with fever, the heir to the throne appeared to be close to death. In desperation, the Tsarina sent Rasputin, who was in Siberia at the time, a telegram asking him to pray for Alexei. Rasputin wrote back quickly, saying, "God has seen your tears and heard your prayers. Do not grieve. The little one will not die. Do not allow the doctors to bother him too much." The next morning, Alexei's condition was unchanged, but Alexandra was encouraged by the message and regained some hope that he would survive. Alexei's bleeding stopped the following day. The royal family's belief that Rasputin possessed the power to heal Alexei brought him considerable status and power at court. The Tsar made Rasputin his lamplighter, which meant he was responsible for keeping the lamps burning in front of religious icons in the palace, and he thus had regular access to the palace and royal family. Rasputin used his status and power to full effect, accepting bribes and sexual favors from admirers while working diligently to expand his influence. But his actions soon led him to become a controversial figure, despised by many of Russia's elite. He was accused by his enemies of religious heresy and rape, and was suspected of exerting undue political influence over the Tsar. He was even rumored to be having an affair with the Tsarina. Opposition to Rasputin's influence grew within the church. In 1907, the local clergy in his home village denounced Rasputin as a heretic, and the Bishop of Tobolsk launched an inquest into his activities, accusing him of spreading false doctrines. In St. Petersburg, he faced opposition from even more prominent critics, including Prime Minister Peter Stolypin and the Okhrana, the Tsar's secret police. Having ordered an investigation into Rasputin's activities, Prime Minister Stolypin confronted the Tsar about him, but he was unable to convince him to rein Rasputin's influence, and was equally unsuccessful in an attempt to bar him from St. Petersburg. In 1909, Kahonia Berlatskaya, who had been one of Rasputin's early supporters in St. Petersburg, accused him of rape. She went to Inspector Theophan for aid, and the incident helped convince the church leaders that Rasputin was a danger to the monarchy. Rumors that Rasputin had assaulted female followers and behaved inappropriately on visits to the royal family, including with the Tsar's teenage daughters, multiplied and were reported widely in the press after March of 1910. On July 12, 1914, a peasant woman attempted to assassinate Rasputin by stabbing him in the stomach while he was home visiting family. He was seriously wounded, but after surgery and some time in hospital, made a recovery. By 1914, World War I, the disappearance of feudalism, and a meddling government bureaucracy had all contributed to Russia's economy declining at a very rapid rate. Many laid the blame with Alexandra and with Rasputin because of his influence over her. One outspoken member of the Duma, the Russian Assembly, stated in November 1916 that the Tsar's ministers had been turned into marionettes. Marionettes whose threats have been taken firmly in hand by Rasputin and the Empress Alexandra, the evil genius of Russia and the Tsarina, who has remained a German on the Russian throne, an alien to the country and its people. In December of that year, a group of nobles led by Prince Felix Yusupov, Grand Duke Dmitry Pavlovich, and right-wing politician Vladimir Perishkevich decided that Rasputin's influence over the Tsarina had made him a threat to the empire. And they concocted a plan to kill him by luring him to Yusupov's palace. Yusupov invited Rasputin to his home shortly after midnight and ushered him into the basement. There, he offered him tea and cakes that had been laced with cyanide. Rasputin initially refused the cakes, but then began to eat. But, to Yusupov's surprise, he did not appear to be affected by the poison. Rasputin then asked for some Madeira wine and drank three glasses, which had also been poisoned, but still showed no signs of distress. At around 2:30 a.m., Yusupov excused himself to go upstairs, where his fellow conspirators were waiting. He grabbed a revolver, then returned to the basement and told Rasputin that he better look at the crucifix and say a prayer, and then shot him once in the chest. Rasputin fell upon the floor. The conspirators then drove to Rasputin's apartment, wearing Rasputin's coat and hat in an attempt to make it look as though he had returned home that night. They returned to the palace, and Yusupov went back to the basement to ensure that Rasputin was dead. But when he entered, Rasputin leapt up and attacked him. Yusupov fought him off with some effort and fled upstairs. Rasputin followed and made it into the palace's courtyard before being shot again and collapsing in a snowbank. The conspirators then wrapped his body in cloth, drove it to the Petrovsky Bridge, and dropped it in the river. News of Rasputin's murder spread quickly, even before his body was found. The Stock Exchange Gazette ran a report of Rasputin's death, saying he died after a party in one of the most aristocratic homes in the center of the city on the afternoon of December 30th, 1916. On January 1st, two workmen noticed blood on the railing of the Petrovsky Bridge and found a boot on the ice below, and police began searching the area. Rasputin's body was found under the river ice, approximately 200 meters downstream from the bridge. The city's senior autopsy surgeon conducted an autopsy. He stated that Rasputin's body had shown signs of severe trauma, including 3 gunshot wounds, a slice wound to his side, and many other injuries. He found a single bullet, but said that it was too badly deformed and of a type too widely used to trace. He found no evidence that Rasputin had been poisoned. His murder had been covered up. Rasputin was buried on January 2nd, 1917, at a small church. He had been just 47 years old when he died. In the months prior to his death, Rasputin had a premonition of his own demise, and it is rumored that he wrote a letter to the royal family. It read, in part, "I feel that I shall leave life before January 1st. I wish to make known to the Russian people, to Papa Tsar Nicholas, to Mother Tsarina Alexandra, and to the children. If it was your relations who have wrought my death, then none of your children will remain alive for more than 2 years. And if they do, they will beg for death as they will see the defeat of Russia, see the Antichrist coming, plague, poverty, destroyed churches, and desecrated sanctuaries where everyone is dead. The Russian Tsar, you will be killed by the Russian people." It was a premonition with weight. In 1918, the royal family, who had abdicated, was summarily rounded up and executed, bringing an end to the Romanov dynasty.